This is NPR's Morning Edition. Bob Edwards is away. I'm Howard Berkus. The Fife Folklore Archives at Utah State University contain this scratchy recording.
In splendor o'er the mountains, some 30 wagons came. They were awaited by a wicked band, oh, Utah bears the blame.
The Ballad of the Mountain Meadows Massacre recalls one of the most painful and embarrassing moments in the history of Utah and the history of the Mormon Church. It tells of a Mormon militia's 1857 attack on a wagon train from Arkansas.
Both men and women, old and young, oh Utah, where's thy shame?
The Southern Utah militia slaughtered 120 men, women, and children. The reason is still unclear. It could have been revenge for murders of Mormons in Arkansas, Missouri, and Illinois. It might have been a response to a pending attack by federal troops aimed at ousting Utah Territory's Mormon theocracy.
No one can explain what happened in these meadows 142 years ago. We may speculate, but we do not know.
Mormon Church President Gordon B. Hinckley stood at Mountain Meadows last September seeking reconciliation. Hinckley addressed a crowd of descendants of both the Mormon militia and the wagon train it attacked.
We cannot comprehend it. It cannot be recalled. It cannot be changed. It is time to leave the entire matter in the hands of God, who deals justly in all things.
The Mormon Church built a new monument to the massacre victims. Hinckley promised to protect it forever as a sacred place on hallowed ground. He then issued this disclaimer.
That which we have done here must never be construed as an acknowledgement on the part of the Church of any complicity in the occurrences of that fateful and tragic day.
I think President Hinckley should be commended for his great efforts, but the idea that they can pay for a monument and then say, well, that's it. That's all we're going to do. We're not going to apologize. We weren't involved in this. It is, I think, denying the reality.
Will Bagley is the author of a forthcoming book about the Mountain Meadows Massacre. He agrees with the last stanza of the massacre ballad, which is missing from the recording in the Fife Folklore Archives. This is what it says. By an order from their president, this bloody deed was done. He was the leader of the Mormon Church. His name was Brigham Young.
The notion that local leaders did this on their own is absurd. If you understand conditions in Utah, no one would do this independently. They were in a theocracy where it was a total top-down system, and for them to go out and murder 120 people on their own hook just doesn't add up.
Bagley cites Brigham Young's attempt to cover up the massacre, his later defense of it, and his treatment of the survivors. 17 children were spared and taken into Mormon homes. The U.S. Army later returned them to Arkansas. Young then billed the federal government for the care they received in Utah after his Mormon militia made them orphans. Still, there's no hard evidence Young ordered the attack. Glenn Leonard directs the Mormon Church Museum of History and Art.
I think the concern that church members and church leaders have is that some people still unfairly place the blame on Brigham Young. The evidence seems clear that he did not order it definitely. When asked, what should we do with these immigrants, he sent a messenger back too late that said, leave them alone. We may not be able to control what the Indians do, but we should not harm these people.
The Mormon militia was already blaming Southern Paiute Indians for the attack. Historians believe Paiutes were somehow involved, but that's contradicted by the tribe's oral history and the fact that some of the militiamen disguised themselves as Indians. Full responsibility was eventually placed on one local leader, John D. Lee, an adopted son of Brigham Young, who was tried and convicted, taken to Mountain Meadows, perched on a coffin, and shot. Historian Will Bagley.
Lee's family has a very interesting take on this. They believe that Lee was a sacrifice that saved the Mormon Church, because the American public was so outraged after the trials of John D. Lee that they had to have a scapegoat. And John D. Lee quite willingly took on that role. He felt that Brigham Young had betrayed him and he bitterly denounced Brigham Young, but he remained faithful to the principles of Mormonism. I believe it's probably true in many ways that John D. Lee's sacrifice saved the Mormon Church in the 19th century.
At Mountain Meadows last September, after dismissing church complicity, Mormon President Gordon B. Hinckley hugged two descendants of wagon train families. Shirley Pyron was one of them.
He had tears in his eyes. And that meant a lot to me, you know, because I know they're sorry whether they can say it or not.
Pyron descends from five of the survivors and 11 of those killed. She still bristles at the image of shallow graves and scattered remains.
Even the little children that were killed were just left there for the wolves. And the bones did show evidence of being gnawed on. Maybe all that would be left of some of the women would be their hair, and their hair would get caught on the sagebrush.
Some of the descendants, Pyron says, can't get past that without a formal apology from the Mormon Church.
There has been a healing process for most of the descendants. There are some still who don't want a closure, but we know that the Mormons living today had nothing to do with that back then. We're four generations later.
What do you think is the difference between you and your ability to maybe accept and reconcile and the inability of others to do that?
Some of them, it has been pounded into them over the years, a hatred. You hate the Mormons. And it's just a way of life for them.
At Mountain Meadows last month, an American flag flapped in the wind. It stands near the new monument, a pyramid of rocks rising to blue Utah sky. This is a place of reconciliation for Paul Furr, great-great-grandson of John D. Lee, the man most blamed for the massacre.
I sometimes think, gee, what would I have done had I been here and involved in the situation and been living in the environment that existed at that time? Obedience to authority being emphasized, and all of a sudden we find that the President of the United States has sent a fairly large army to Utah to put the Mormons down, so to speak. I may have been one of the first people to grab my old musket-loading rifle and been out on the front lines.
Can you imagine yourself having complied with an order to come to this meadow and perhaps, you know, shoot a child in the head?
Gosh, that's hard to say. I don't think I could have. But then again, I'm in a different environment. You know, this is 2000 instead of 1857. I am not the strong religious zealot like my great-great-grandfather was. The environment's completely different today. I don't think something like that could happen again today. No way. But back in that time, I'm surprised it even happened then.
We stand quiet and listen to cows in distant meadows, crickets in golden grass, birds in cottonwoods by a spring. 29 victims lie beneath the monument. An infant is the only one identified. 8 dozen others are believed scattered about. No one knows precisely where. No one still knows precisely why.